America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We welcome you back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. PPV.com is the leader in live pay-per-view events. They are our wonderful presenting sponsor. Go to them. Go to their website. Check them out. Go to their social medias. They do AEW wrestling as well. There's going to be some big pay-per-views coming up. Geronta Davis, Lamont Roach 2. That's always a good time when you order with PPV.com. No subscriptions, none of that stuff. They're not going to ask you to throw down a bunch of money. It goes fight by fight. If you want, you get us on fight night in the live interactive chat. You get great content. It's a win-win for all boxing fans out there. So go to PPV.com. Go to their social media. Show some love for them, because when you show love for PPV.com, you're showing love for Inside Boxing Live. And I'm showing love for our guy, Chris Algieri, who's here in the guinea tea and the beads for those who are just listening to the podcast. Those are not watching, giving you some visual. He's flexing now, those that are listening. You got to be watching. Start watching us on YouTube. Guys, subscribe.
If you're only listening, you're missing out on, I mean, listen, we cover all the topics, of course. If you can only listen, but you're definitely missing out on some of the show, because some of the stupid faces that we make, and, you know, the bicep flexing.
You're missing out on my...
Sometimes my dog or one of my dogs jumps on my lap.
You miss out on the Dan Canobio bobblehead?
Get the bobblehead, the commemorative bobblehead of Dan Canobio.
Well, we love all of our viewers, or what do we call it? Audience or community is what I was told to call it when I was working at
community,
John Boy.
Community, I like that.
Yes, don't call them fans, call them community. So I love our community, those who listen, those who watch.
Listeners, watch. Yeah, you can't say listeners, you're right. I always say listeners. You can't really say listeners, because we are our YouTube format as well.
Yeah, because I get people community DMing us with, you know, that are listening to the pod, like on vacation or throughout the day.
I think the majority of my friends listen. They don't watch. But
because like I would say, not saying that you're an old, Chris, but I'm up there too. There's a whole generation. There's a whole generation that they watch YouTube. Like there's the generation right below us are YouTube watchers. I watch a lot of podcasts. I'm home. I work from home. But there's a large amount of people, like the generation below us, that doesn't have cable, and they just go from one YouTube video to the next, and that's their way of watching TV.
I don't have cable, but I'm a subscription person.
Streamer.
Which is so great about PPV.com, because there's never a subscription, so really there's no reason to go anywhere else. If you're going to watch a pay-per-view,
that's a freaking pitch, man. That's a pitch, man, right there. How was your weekend?
I listen to a lot of podcasts too, and the guys who do the best ads are the ones that sneak them seamlessly into the podcast.
Yeah. How was the weekend? What'd you get into?
It was good. I had a lot of plans to do yard work, but I got rained out. So, another weekend in Florida where there's a lot of missed opportunities to do work, because it's so hard to do work here. It's either beautiful or rainy. And when it's beautiful, you don't want to do work because you want to enjoy the weather. And when it's rainy, it's like, I'll just chill.
The one time New York had better weather than you, bro. Saturday, did you hear about this in New York City? The first 75-degree day of the year, and people lost their minds.
Oh, wow.
Central Park full, Sheep's Meadow full, every outdoor place full, every brunch place full. Naturally, I went to the Yankee game. And so arguably the best Yankee game I've ever been to in my 30 years of going to Yankee games, because they scored 20 runs. They broke the record for home runs hit, 9 home runs.
That's ridiculous.
Bro, they led off the game with 3 consecutive home runs on 3 pitches. That's never been done in the history of baseball. The stadium, it was hot. Everyone was happy. Everyone was outside to start the game. Like, the vibes were immaculate before we even got the first pitch. Because, okay, we're back. We're at Yankee Stadium. It was a rough winter. It was a rough World Series for the Yanks. 3 straight home runs. Judge hits 3 home runs in the game.
The vibes.
Bro, it was awesome. It was wild. The vibes were sick.
people listening who aren't from New York or don't really know the New York area, by the time we get the first spring day, everyone is like rabid to get outside. You're just stuck inside. Winters in New York really suck. Snow sucks. Being cold sucks. Commuting during the winter sucks. As soon as it gets nice, people lose their minds. I mean, it's mini skirts galore. Everyone's outside. That's why I'm wearing my wife beater, because this is what guys do in New York. When it gets warm, you wear a wife beater and beads, and you flex around. That's what it's about.
Bro, and it happened to fall on a Saturday, which is like one of those days in New York. It was awesome. And let's go Yanks. It's going to be an awesome year.
Let's go Yanks.
Let's get into the boxing, because this is not a baseball podcast. This is a little bit of a weather.
It's not a New York baseball podcast.
It is a little bit of a weather podcast some days. But
yeah, most days we talk about weather.
Let's get into it. I want to start the show off with a story. Before we get to our fight recaps, I want to start the show off with a story that came from Bob Arum, interviewed by Sean Zettel. Go follow him on socials. Go subscribe to his YouTube page. He catches up with a lot of boxers and fighters. Out at fights. So Sean Zettel caught up with Bob Arum. Bob Arum says that Top Rank will be collaborating with PBC to make big fights named Gervonta Davis as one of the guys that he would like to work with. Of course, Gervonta Davis, Lomachenko could be one of them. Gervonta Davis, Keyshawn Davis could be one of them. When I saw this headline, I was like, wow, this is interesting, because obviously, he wants to try to put a dent into TKO boxing. Obviously, he wants to make big fights. Ultimately, this is a great thing for boxing fans here in the U.S. is the main takeaway that I got from this little interview snippet with Bob Arum.
It's so wild that it takes something like an outside force encroaching on your territory in order to team up with, you know, the guys who are you're on the same side of the world. We're right here. We easily could be working together, could have been working together for years. We could have been getting these fights long ago. We could have gotten the Gervonta Davis Lomachenko fight when they were closer to their primes, or at least Lomachenko was. But alas, we're here. And as boxing fans, we can't complain when we get what we finally want, because otherwise we'd be complaining all the time. But no, this is a good thing. I mean, Top Rank and PBC willing to work together, making big fights, because that was always like the divide, right? Like you're never going to see Gervonta with these guys. Yeah, they're talking about it. Maybe they can go above and beyond, but the fights don't happen. Now we got Bob actually going out on record saying that. Shit, man, it's going to be a good rest of this year, I think.
Well, I'm hopeful, you know me, optimistic Dan. Hopeful that this is true. Like Bob Arum, you know, he doesn't just say things just to say things. Like the Gervonta Davis Lomachenko fight was at the 1 yard line. I did confirm that with a lot of different people that were making those discussions. And it came down to Lomachenko ultimately saying, you know what, I just want to sit out the rest of the year. But a Gervonta Davis Keyshawn Davis fight could potentially happen if Gervonta beats Lamont Roach on June 21st. But yes, I am excited about this. And yes, it does take an outside force to kind of wake up some of these promoters or wake up some of the competition. And the outside force is TKO boxing. The outside force is what's going on in Saudi Arabia. Sean did ask Arum, directly, hey, does this have anything to do with Turki Alsheik? And Arum goes, of course it does. Of course, yeah. Like, they're doing a lot of fights in Saudi. You know, we're a U.S. promoter. We'd like to work with other U.S. promoters. And I would say the two biggest U.S. promoters right now are PBC and Top Rank. And they both have pretty good rosters. And they both have fun, exciting fights. And Top Rank is looking for a network. Could we see Top Rank potentially put fights on Prime? And that would make things even easier between the two organizations, PBC and Top Rank, if they're both working with the same streaming service, kind of like how Matchroom and Golden Boy are all under DAZN and now Queensberry. So there's a lot of moving parts that are going around here, Chris. Ultimately think it's a great thing. Excited for what fights can possibly be made. But yes, when we see competition makes you do some interesting things. Because like you said, like Top Rank in PBC 5 years ago, you had Arum calling Al Heyman a cancer. And PBC being very upset with that comment.
That's boxing, man. Things change in it overnight. One thing though, and you alluded to this, Dan, we call Bob the Bob Father for a reason. When the guy says something, it happens. He predicted what Inoue was going to do for his next three fights, and it's coming true. He says, next fight's going to be in Vegas. Guess what? It's in Vegas. We got him a guy. He's fighting, you know, in May. And then coming up, you know, in the rest of the year, you know, he said he's probably going to fight Nakatani at some point. I bet you that's going to happen. I mean,
I just read that, now that you're talking about Inoue, I just read that the MJ fight is signed, sealed, and delivered for...
Oh, Nakmagomedov. That's a great fight,
for
too.
September. I said, hey, guys, let's respect Ramon Cardenas here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's looking way past putting the cart before the horse. But I mean, most people are gonna he's gonna be a big favorite. But regardless,
yeah,
of that,
I get it.
We might see Nakatani at the end of the year, but that's just the way that Bob moves. When he says something, when he says something's gonna happen, he doesn't mince words either. When he asks him, you know, like you said, when he asks him about Turkey, does this have to do with him? He goes, yeah, of course it does. Like, and yeah, Bob doesn't beat around the bush, man. And when he says things, there's gravitas to it. There's weight to what he says, because, you know, he's the Bob father, man.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be, I've heard some rumblings of this, none of it like confirmed, just like industry guys chatting. Like, you know, the U.S. promoters, it was a wake-up call with that TKO announcement. It should have been a wake-up call with all the Saudi movement a few years ago, 2 years ago.
Collecting
but
paychecks, bro.
Exactly.
They weren't worried about it. They were like, okay, we just got another way to get our guys paid. We're going to,
right.
They're not going to come in and try and take our territory. Oops.
Yeah. So I don't know if this, like, the immediate questions that I'm sure a lot of fans are thinking is like, does this mean that top ranked fighters are not going to fight on Riyadh season cards? And does this mean that, PBC fighters traditionally haven't for the most part? I don't know. I think it's case by case. I think everything is very fluid right now. Like, look at Teofimo Lopez, signed to Top Rank, probably their top three investment, probably one of their top three fighters under that banner. He's fighting in Riyadh season card on May 2nd because he's making a shit ton of money, and Top Rank gets a percentage of that. But maybe that.
But also, he was
changes.
A guy who was demanding big money from Top Rank, and that just really wasn't there. So this is kind of works out for Top Rank. Well, they got this guy who's demanding these big purses that we're not willing to put up at this moment. And then it's like, oh, these guys come in. It's like, all right, they're willing to pay him, so we'll put them over there. And yes, we do get a piece of that anyway. So
not even like they weren't willing. It's just like under a traditional. Mm-hmm. Under a traditional business model, like it's just simple economics. Like, if Teofimo isn't bringing in the revenue that Inoue is bringing in, Inoue gets paid more because he is bringing in more revenue. Canelo Alvarez gets paid the most because he brings in the most eyeballs and the most asses in seats. Teofimo, great fighter, not bringing in top tier ratings, not bringing in unbelievable gates, so therefore you can't pay him. But when you're dealing with the Saudis and you're dealing with, they don't care about that. They don't look at the traditional ways because they are just throwing money around for all different reasons that fans are very well understand at this point. So yes, this is ultimately could be a very good thing. It got me thinking about some PBC Top Rank fights that we could be made in the immediate future. Obviously, Gervonta Davis versus Lomachenko comes to mind. Gervonta Davis versus Keyshawn Davis comes to mind. Fundora versus Zayas. That is now an ordered fight by the WBO. That was Sean also asked Aram about that, and he said, yes, that will be made, especially if PBC and Top Rank want to collaborate even more. So that's a given. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend. There was a rumor out there that Stephen Fulton will be moving up to 130 pounds and could potentially be fighting Oshaki Foster. Which is a fight that I never even thought, never even crossed my mind. Nope. But that's something that could happen under this alliance. And then Brian Norman, who we saw this past weekend, 147-pound champion, a unification with Mario Barrios, could be fun.
Yeah, Stephen, I gotta touch on that. Stephen Fulton, that's interesting. I mean, he just moved up to 26. He's not a very big 26-pounder. Going up to 30, Oshaki's huge, dude. He's a really big 30-pounder. But interesting. I think there's a lot of good fights with the Top Rank stable for Stephen Fulton at 26. You know, you got Venato Lopez, who just came back. You know, that's an interesting fight. Carrington, absolutely, that makes a lot of sense. I think Bruce Shushu actually called him out, was saying that he liked that fight. You know, there's a ton of good fights over there. I mean, Angelo Leo, who's, you know, working with Top Rank, he's got a big fight over in Japan. He's one of the world champions. You know, he's in that mix. Seeing an Angelo Leo Stephen Fulton rematch makes a lot of sense. I don't know if Stephen Fulton should move up just yet. There's a lot of good work to be done at 126.
Investigative Dan reporter, Dan. That's not me, but sometimes I am. He tweeted, Fulton was tweeting all weekend, so I just replied to one of his tweets. I was like, hey, is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to 130? He liked it. He didn't respond. He didn't say yes or no. So I think he's weighing all his options right now. I think
in terms of where we stand in the current social media communications, I don't think a like necessarily means a yes.
An endorsement?
Yes, I don't believe so.
Well, it's different in a text. If you're texting someone and they just like your text and they don't respond to me, that means conversation over. Or I'm busy, or like, yeah, I see it, but I can't reply.
You take that as like, cool, bro?
Yeah.
That's a cool bro.
Yeah. Especially if you're texting with a female and she just hits you with she just likes it and doesn't respond. Like that. To me, I'm not double texting. I'm ending the conversation. That's it. To me, that's a period. You just said goodbye.
I'm not double texting.
I will double text if I really like you, but that's a sign of desperation as well.
True, but sometimes if you're not desperate, you don't eat.
It's true. Persistence, some people like that. But Keith Idick tweeted, reps for PBC and Top Rank have talked about newly crowned WBC champ Stephen Fulton fighting number one contender Bruce Carrington next.
There you go.
That would be a Top Rank PBC collection. The problem is that WBC wants Fulton to fight Ray Vargas, who hasn't fought in over a year. He had that split draw with Nick Ball. Vargas also lost his previous fight to Oshaki Foster.
At 130, though, so he's back down to 26.
Yeah, no one's thinking about Ray Vargas. We're thinking about Bruce Carrington. We're thinking about Stephen Fulton. We're thinking about Nick Ball. We're thinking when it comes to featherweight. But to go back to the main topic here, it's like that's a fun fight. I mean, Fulton Foster, Fulton Carrington, like these aren't headliners, but maybe they will be on like a prime. But like underneath a tank Loma, underneath a tank Keyshawn, underneath a tank Lamont Roach, we could see it as early as that. We can see some Top Rank fighters appearing on the June 21st card. I think that's probably not as likely because the Top Rank deal would still be in place with ESPN. But, you know, these are combining rosters and combining, like, getting creative, thinking about how can we cater to the American market, which is a very strong market. Don't abandon the American market. Things that we've been talking about on the show for a while now. Like, to combine those rosters, give us fights down on lower on the cards, like Norman Barrios or Gary Russell at 140 versus some of the 140-pounders at Top Rank or some of the lightweights that want to move up, etc.
Well, it's such a shame that for all these years we've gotten accustomed to, well, we can't think about that fight because, you know, they're with different organizations. They're on the opposite sides of the street, like we always say. But now we're getting these new imaginary matchups in our head that are actually possible now. Because listen, how many times have I said, like, oh, how about this guy and this guy? And you're like, well, that'll never happen. We shouldn't even really.
Right, we're programmed as fans. That.
Yes, and that's a shame. That's a real shame that we have been beaten into submission, into understanding, thinking that, you know, we can't make that fight. It's too difficult logistically or business-wise. But now we've got these guys mixing, and there's a ton of talent between these two promotional arms. And now we can match up these make these fights happen. First of all, as fans, that's awesome. But also for the fighters, man, this is how you grow your brand. This is how you become a staple, a well-known star in the sport, is you get big fights against big names. And that's just how this game works. And now we're going to see some of these. So I don't know. I'm normally pessimistic. I'm feeling pretty optimistic today.
Because it's not a crazy idea. It's not a crazy idea, Chris.
No,
we're not saying
it's supposed to be, Dan. That's the thing. Like we're so conditioned to be like, you know, but now this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. This is not a crazy idea to think, hey, maybe we should, extend the olive branch a little bit to our friends here in the U.S. PBC could probably use a little jolt. Top Rank could use a little jolt. Top Rank doesn't have a broadcast home after July. You know, it starts to make sense. I've been hearing a lot of theories. I'm hearing a lot of crazy ideas. Obviously, the TKO League is a lot more extravagant than this potential alliance between Top Rank and PBC. But, you know, this one makes a lot of sense. And also, like, it's healthy. Like, I'm not down with, like, saying Saudi's bad. Like, we're getting those awesome fights, like, Beterbiev Bivol and Usyk Fury and the 5-on-5s. And now you throw in, all right, let's get an occasional you know, top ranked PBC pay-per-view here in Vegas or wherever in the States. Like, okay, now we're looking at like a healthy ecosystem of boxing. Like, we can all eat. Like, the Saudi fights are great. Love them. The let's get some fights here in the US as well. And let's get the whole sport eaten.
There's plenty of food to go around. There's plenty of food to go around with this sport. You know, just a little sliver of the market is a ton. The market share is humongous. And yes, we're a niche sport, but there's a ton of money. Everyone can eat. There's not one stepping over another, and that means you can't get it. Everybody can get it. As long as we're able to make the big fights and we get enough eyes and we bring boxing to the level that it's supposed to be at in terms of the quality of the competition, you're going to get more eyes. We're going to become a bigger sport if we're able to make the fights that the fans want. And that's just how it's supposed to be. It's crazy that, you know, if that's not really ever been the case, but yeah, we're getting closer and closer to that.
Yes, keep an eye on that. Good job by our guy Sean Zatel for catching up with Aram, giving us something to talk about here on
solid
the podcast.
Dude, love me some Sean. I always see him when we go into Vegas.
He's a hustler. Dude. He's a New Yorker too. He lives out in Vegas, so he can. I always like, man, that kid hustles. And then he told me he was from Brooklyn. I was like, okay, makes sense.
That makes sense.
New York centric here on the pod. Let's get to the weekend fights. There were a slew of fights, some more competitive than the others. We'll start with the most competitive fight of the weekend. That was William Zepeda versus Tevin Farmer rematch. William Zepeda wins narrowly, 116, 112, 115, 113. One judge had it even. Zepeda looked good early. He had Cancun rocking. Our guy Curry Erdman on the call. I felt the vibes. I wish I was there. I want to work a fight in Cancun, but I digress. Zepeda landed 200 more punches. He threw close to 250 more. He had a 243-111 edge in power shots. But don't tell that to Tevin Farmer, because it looked like Farmer was going to be out in the second round. Not only did Farmer survive, he started winning rounds late because this guy is just tough as nails. Shout out Tevin Farmer. William Zepeda, I don't know what to make of him after these 22 rounds with Farmer.
Yeah, this fight went what I predicted, I thought it was going to be another tough decision, but Zepeda was going to get it. And it would be a little more clear this time that Zepeda, you know, should get the nod, which it was. But yeah, Tevin Farmer, dude, I mean, his skills speak for themselves. Just like the last fight, he had trouble early on. He was like, it looked like he was going to get overwhelmed by Zepeda like everyone else does. And I think even it looked like Tevin Farmer hurt his left arm.
Yeah, he hurt his hand
at some point in the middle of the fight. And it seemed like he wanted out. And he stuck it out and then started finding success late and really put on a hell of a charge. He almost was able to put Zepeda down in the last round. He was looking to go for the stoppage, which he needed in order to win. But great late charge. The old savvy vet still got it. He still got some fights left. But now he's 0-2. And I would say 0-3 now in his last three, no? Because he lost to Murataya and then Zepeda's twice. Yeah, so.
Well, he fought Murataya pretty good. Man. Yeah, he fought Murataya good.
He fought Zepeda great the first time, and you know he fought well again. But listen, on the record, he's still 0-3.
Right, but I get that. But like the Murataya performance got him into the discussion to get Zepeda in the first place when they announced this in Saudi. And I gotta say, like, I'm not afraid to say, Dan, you were wrong. When they announced Zepeda Farmer, the original one for Saudi Arabia, remember, it was like part of the 5-on-5 Latino night.
Yep.
I was like, what the hell are we doing? Zepeda is a world beater. He's supposed to be fighting Shakur. Farmer, we haven't heard from this guy. He's a clear B-side. Like, he's going to get hurt in there. I remember saying that. The Farmer is going to get hurt. Not the case. I mean, this ended up being 22 rounds of very close. And Chris, you said that you thought this fight was wider for Zepeda. I thought it was like, you know, looked almost the same in terms of like competition wise.
Well, I thought the last fight was like, it could go either way. This one, I thought Zepeda definitely won, but it was very, very close. I don't think it was wider. I think I say more clear in terms of it's like, because with the first fight, it's like the first fight, I'm like, I think Tevin won. And this fight, I was like, all right, I think the first fight, I was like, I think I could see Tevin winning. And then this fight, I was like, all right, I think Zepeda won, you know, so more clear, but definitely not wider. No, both were extremely, extremely competitive. And that late charge from Tevin was huge.
Unbelievable. And good for him. The small ass ring, like everything stacked against him, does get paid. Great night.
I also like that they made it a 12 rounder, you know, since the first fight was a 10 rounder. I think that was, that was a classy move to try and get a little more separation, which almost hurt Zepeda even more because he did almost get stopped in that last round. I'd love to see what the scorecards are. I should have looked that up before.
All right, I read them off.
No, like per round, round by round by the
judges. Oh, round by round? I probably could find that.
Yeah, I always like to see the breakdown of how the judges have who getting what and kind of the flow of the fight, especially a fight like that.
But Zepeda gets the win. He keeps his mandatory status against Shakur Stevenson. I don't know when that fight's going to happen. I don't know how we feel about Zepeda heading into that fight after these 22 rounds with Farmer. This fight was supposed to, the original fight was supposed to make Zepeda look great. It did not. The rematch was made for Zepeda to right the wrongs of the first fight, a fight that you thought could have went either way. The rematch, we're thinking, all right, Zepeda could get him out of there. He could be dominant. You know, it could be a 118-110 type of fight. That's not the case again. After 22 rounds of watching William Zepeda versus a former champion and Tevin Farmer, how do you feel about William Zepeda going forward, potentially against Shakur Stevenson?
No, he doesn't stand a chance against Stevenson, and he never really did. But there was that kind of idea, like, I don't know, this guy, man, he's really aggressive, and he throws a lot of punches. And hey, if Shakur has a hand problem and he can't keep this guy off of him, oh, we got a real fighter in hands. Now it's like, no, we don't, because a guy like Tevin, who is slick and slippery, he's not as slick and slippery as it's different. He's not as difficult to hit as a Shakur Stevenson is. And there were times where Zepeda was overwhelming Tevin, and Tevin took the shots well. Shakur is bigger than him. He's better at controlling range than him. He's going to be able to keep Zepeda on the end of those punches, and Zepeda's not going to be able to be as busy as he is with everybody else. And that's really going to be the difference. Guys who are volume punchers, they need to get in position. And Shakur is the best positioning fighter in the world today. You're not going to make a position on him to let those hands go so you can throw 60, 70, 80 punches around. It's not going to happen with Shakur. So I don't see how Zepeda could actually make that fight even competitive, let alone, you know, beat Shakur. But yeah, in that first fight, took all the wind out of the sails of Zepeda. People were talking about him like
the hype, the hype.
This is the guy, man. This guy's a star for Golden Boy. He can beat everybody in the division. He's so entertaining. You know, he's more than just a two-fisted puncher. He's got skills too. And then that first Tevin fight happens, and people are like, all right, let's move on. And then he just had to get this one in the rear view, I think. He just had to get this win because he's still gonna match up. He's still gonna get those fights. He'll still be fun, except for Shakur. I don't think he's fun with that fight either.
Well, yeah, I never thought he was going to beat Shakur, but I do agree with you that like it was intriguing at one point, and momentum for Zepeda has completely like washed away. Like, yeah, he fought twice, which is great. We want all of our guys to be active, but you know there were some glaring things we saw. Like defense, as we know, isn't anyone that throws 70, 80 punches is going to be vulnerable defensively. Farmer does not have power. Chin.
He dropped him. So Tevin dropped him. He hurt him this fight. Like, you know, Tevin's not a puncher. And he's fighting a weight class up. This is not where Tevin's, you know, at his physical best. So there's a lot, like you said, a lot of glaring things that we've seen show up now because of Zepeda, what he's missing.
What about anything to learn from this? Like I tweeted that out, like, you know, yeah, he went 22 rounds and he didn't look good or great, but I think Zepeda will learn a lot from this. And then I was barraged with people like, really? Like, I didn't learn anything. In fact, this only exposed Zepeda and immediately went right to Stevenson. There's no way he beat Stevenson. Yeah, okay, we know that. But, like, what about some of the other guys at 135 that could Zepeda – like, Zepeda, he's not done.
No.
Like, he's not, like
– and honestly, I think this will help him get those other fights. Because now, at this point, if you're handling Zepeda, what do you do with him? Do you go straight for the Shakur guy and look for a cash out over in Riyadh? Do you set him up with a Keyshawn Davis who he's going to get crushed by as well? Do you go right to that fight? Do you look to cash him out? Do you look to keep him busy and then you risk the chance of him looking ordinary again against the guy he's supposed to beat? And then his stock goes down even more. His ability to earn goes down even more. It's really difficult moving a fighter in every sense. But at this point for Zepeda, you really got to make a stern decision here. Do you know now? Probably what they're going to do is they're going to sign up with a guy that he's going to blow away. And he's going to look like Zepeda of old. And then they're going to look to get a big fight, maybe a cash out situation. But, I mean, he's got a lot of money still to be made. Because even with a loss, he can go round robin with all those guys and fight everybody. Because he is entertaining. I mean, there's no reason not to make those fights.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ESPN has him ranked number 5, right below the champs. You know, Keyshawn 4, Stevenson 3, Lomachenko 2, which is crazy. I don't know if I'd have Lomachenko 2. And then Davis, number 1. Yeah, I could see that. I could see Golden Boy maybe one more fight, get this guy going. But the thing with Stevenson is I don't think Stevenson's going to get that tank fight this year as much as we want to see that. Stevenson has to fight somebody. And Zepeda still is the interim WBC champion. And that goes to your question of, will Golden Boy look at those 22 rounds when they have their little internal meetings without Zepeda in the room? And they're like, oh, man, let's get that Stevenson fight. Let's just finally do it. And maybe he catches him. He'll probably lose, but... You know, we'll make a good amount of money on it. And then hopefully he doesn't lose too bad that we could, you know, keep his reputation as a fun, exciting fighter and rebuild him.
In a world where we don't have Saudi, that fight doesn't happen right away because it can't be sold. Because people are going to look at that and be like, come on, dude. He just struggled with Tevin Farmer twice. Now you're going to send up with a better southpaw who's bigger? No way. That fight doesn't make sense. But because Saudi doesn't care about the intrigue, really, of certain fights. There's a lot of money. They'll still make that fight. It'll be a showcase for Shakur. He'll be able to shut down a guy with a sterling record the way he was able to do with Oscar Valdez a few years ago. And then it's like, all right, that fight can be actually still be made. It still can be salvaged because it's two good records. It's two guys that, you know, in the same orbit. And they're both doing fights over there. So if the money's there, that fight can actually be made. But again, it would be a cash out from Golden Boy because they don't have that many stars. Zepeda's one of them. They'd be getting rid of one of their guys.
Yeah, it's interesting how they've maneuvered him, but he still maintains that mandatory position. Didn't lose to Farmer, technically, just didn't look great. Over to ESPN, Bruce Carrington picks up a win at 126 pounds. He blows out Enrique Vivas. Vivas getting up there in age, but has the three losses heading in, but never been stopped. And Carrington did stop him. I thought Carrington looked really good. I liked his punch selection. I liked him in the pocket. I mean, he looked a little meaner, sat down on his shots, and then he cut an unbelievable promo after the fight that I should be getting some royalties for because I reposted it, and it's got like 100,000 views of where I said, I like this. Name names, Bruce. Like fighters, when they do these post-fight interviews, they say, yeah, I want all the champs. And then they say, it's up to my team, whatever my team thinks. Carrington was like, forget that. Like, I want Nick Ball. I want Stephen Fulton. Didn't name Espinoza, but good job by Kriegel to say, well, what about Rafael Espinoza? He's signed with Top Rank. Well, I heard that Espinoza doesn't want that smoke with me, but I take him too. So all in all, Carrington did what he was supposed to do. He blew out a guy that he was supposed to beat. He called out some other champs. He made some noise on social media, which, you know, he's likes to do. Thought it was a good night for Bruce.
Yeah, great night for Bruce. Enrique Vivas is one of those guys on paper you look at, and I called a bunch of those fights, those losses that he had. They're awesome fights, always super tough. But he hasn't been active. He hasn't been in the ring in a while. You know, so Shushu did what he was supposed to do and got the stoppage and never been stopped. But Vivas is one of those guys. He's a warrior. He's right in front of you. You know, he's gonna bang with you. And what we're seeing from Shushu, as you said, in the pocket, especially in the inside, even though he's a guy for this weight class who's got a long reach, he's vicious on the inside. The way he moves that right hand, he mixes it up beautifully. He throws a short, straight right hand. He rips the uppercut. He's got a chopping right hook off the rear side, and he follows up because he believes in his defense on the inside. He's not pulling away. He's not off balance. He's right there to keep hitting you with power shots and then follow up if he does catch you. So beautiful, beautiful work from Shushu on the inside. Really, really dangerous guy. And this way is developing into a really dangerous guy, even for these top guys, because you got a guy who can fight that well on the inside, who's catching and shooting and rolling and firing. He catches you with some shit you don't see. And then he follows up. So hat has been tipped to Shushu. Good work, young man.
Yes, love this division. Probably my favorite division right now in boxing is featherweight. Carrington, I feel like, gets the credit sometimes. Some fans and some pundits are like, he's 27. Or what are we waiting for here? Let's get it moving.
He's apparently not waiting for anything. He wants it now.
Yeah, I mean, there was an urgency to his entire night. There was an urgency in the ring. He wanted to make a statement and get this guy out of here. If you would have went the distance with him, we would have had a lot of questions. So he gets this guy out of here like he should have. The post-fight interview, a lot of urgency there too. It's like he's hearing us say all these things like, dude, when are you going to get this? When are you going to get a title shot? Like, you're ranked. He's ranked by every organization, which is like really hard to do because these organizations right. are cockamamie. And
they're super fragmented.
Right. But everyone can agree, or you've played the game. You've played the game well enough now that the majority of them have you ranked within their top five or top 10. And it's a fun division. And there's some names like a Nick Ball. He immediately calls out like a Stephen Fulton, which, you know, WBC or PBC has discussed with Top Rank. That would be an unreal fight. But the one name that was glaringly missing from Carrington's call out was Espinosa. Who is a featherweight champion, who is signed with Top Rank. And Carrington was like, oh, I was told that, you know, Top Rank either doesn't want to make it or Espinosa is not interested in it, which is kind of shocking. Like, really? Mm. Like, that's like, what's the thought process behind that?
Espinosa is a budding Mexican star. And I think that they're going to look to do Mexican-Mexican matchups. You don't want to, they probably don't want to give the young bull a chance to try and steal the thunder when literally this kid's on the cusps of being a tremendous star for the Mexican audiences, which, as we know, that market is massive, and Bob is always looking to make that star. Do you want to risk it against a really dangerous young guy coming up who's only got 15 fights or 14 fights to shoo? You know, it sucks, but I get it. I know why. They're not going to be trying to jam that shoo fight down the champ's throat with with Espinosa. So I think that that's more maneuvering by Top Rank and also Espinosa's people, you know, to build him as a Mexican giant.
Yeah, and he might be moving up. Like, he's that's big.
Then that they fight at 30 is stupid. If that's not on their roadmap soon,
it definitely is.
I don't know what are they doing. Of course it is.
That's a Top Rank Arizona, maybe special. Late fall of this year.
Arizona, New Mexico, you know, that's a huge fight.
Right. I think that's the case with Espinosa. Just, you know, we don't know for sure. We're just kind of reading the tea leaves like we usually do. But there's some other names at 126 for Carrington. He just has to get in there. Like Nick Ball is like, I understand that he's being rumored with Inoue, right? So, you know, his people could be telling him, like, you will fight Inoue in December. Inoue has two more fights until then. And that's a jump up to a whole nother weight class. But we know that it's a lottery ticket. Like, Nick Ball has a lottery ticket in his hand. And it's not like a sure, bona fide lottery ticket. Like, in the years past, do you remember when Canelo was unifying 168 and the last piece was Caleb Plant?
Yeah.
And Caleb Plant had that last piece that Canelo wanted, and Caleb Plant knew it. And he sat out.
A ton of money.
Yes. And Plant wisely sat out for 10 months. Didn't take any fight in the in-between because he was holding the ticket. He was holding the Canelo ticket. And the Canelo ticket's even bigger than the Inoue ticket. Nick Ball, in a sense, is holding some type of ticket because all the things I just listed. Because there are a lot of variables. Like, Inoue has to win twice. One of them is against a very tough opponent in Akhmadaliyev, if that fight comes together. And the other, and Roman Cardenas, is a puncher. We know about that, not overlooking him. And then a move up to 126, which we don't know if it's 100% happening. So does Nick Ball, in the meantime, fight a Carrington? Probably not. But do I want to see it? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to wait. You know, I was in a similar situation for the Pacquiao fight. I just didn't have that much time and I couldn't sit out, but I knew I was the guy and I knew they had no other opponents after I won against Ruslan, because Bob Arum said it in the press conference after the Ruslan fight. I want to see Pacquiao in Algeria. I want to see the Algeria kid fight Pacquiao.
And they asked me, think when he said that,
I was like, well, I'm like, this guy just booked me for Pacquiao. That's what I thought. I was like, oh shit.
But I'm like, you're like, you must have been feeling like you must have been riding so high. Face broken. Just wanted a title. And then you have Aram go, hey, I want him to fight the second biggest cash cow in the boxing world at that time.
Well, listen to this. I beat Emmanuel Taylor. He was ranked number two or three, you know, by the WBO, and they wanted him to fight Ruslan. The next morning, I come down to the hotel breakfast, and Joe DiGuardia is there, and he goes, "Hey, I what do you think about the Ruslan Provodnikov fight next?" And I'm like, "Can I breathe?" I was like, "Man, I'm like, what are you talking about?" Because he talked to Bob, and he was like, because he was supposed to have Taylor was supposed to fight Provodnikov, and then I beat Taylor, and then him and Bob spoke, and they were like, "All right, I guess this guy's gonna fight him." And then right after the Provodnikov fight, Bob once again steps in and goes, "All right, I want to see that Pacquiao Algeria fight." And so once the negotiating started, bro, I made them wait for like 2 weeks. I didn't answer my phone. My lawyer shut everything down. Like, "Oh, you want to make this fight happen? This is the only fight guy you have available is me. Well, get your checkbook out. Let's make this interesting." So there are opportunities when you can do that, when you do actually have the upper hand with these guys and negotiating. Doesn't happen much. And you can blow deals that way if you wait too long. But it just depends on the situation. Like with Plant, he had a belt, so there was no way he could blow that deal.
The belt was currency.
I didn't have that much time. I could have blown that deal, and they could have just said, "Well, Pacquiao fight another time or another guy."
Right, whatever. They would have found someone.
I couldn't play with it for too long, but still, I was able to get a lot more money based off that deal. But we were talking about. I digress. Back to current day boxing, and stop talking about myself. But with the Nick Ball and Shushu situation, I don't see that fight happening.
No,
I
that one's
Ball
gone.
Would take that risk. Shushu's really risky. He's really risky. He doesn't have a lot of fights. His profile is, sure, it's growing. But I don't know if a lot of those guys look at him at that level yet, even though we do skill-wise and ability-wise. He is at that level. But I don't think the guys at the top of the sport are really looking at him like, "Oh, yeah, this is a viable guy." He's also way too dangerous to give him.
Yeah, he's just in a weird spot.
Yeah, very weird spot.
Angelo Leo's profile is very fast,
and his skills are coming up to that position, but people aren't going to give him that chance.
Oh man, he looked good, man, and that promo is doing wonders for him. Angelo Leo is a champ. He's fighting in May 24th in Japan against Kamida. He's a champ too. That people just kind of, it's not on the minds of everyone, even though he should be. And he's working, Pro Box is working with Top Rank.
Lopez is beating everybody, and he.
Well, that's another thing too.
Still, he can't get the attention.
Like I would see Carrington and Leo, because Top Rank and Pro Box, you guys have been feeding a nice feeder system, and more than a feeder system, because Leo is a legit champ. He's not a B-side. He's a champion, so that could be a fight. But in maybe the fall for Carrington for a title. You brought up Lopez, like he's on the comeback trail. I think he has a fight scheduled. Like he sat out for a year. He fought
this past weekend, yes.
Okay, right, you're right.
Yeah, Lopez is back, yes.
ESPN needs to update their rankings here. He's a name. Carrington versus Lopez. That's a fight that promoters have been making for years, this type of fight. Lopez working his way back in, former champion, a name versus the up-and-comer. Like, I could see that being there. We just made a fight here. Carrington Lopez. I want to see that next.
I think
Carl Moretti, are you listening right now?
That's an easy fight to make, I believe. And it makes sense. You know, it's if Venato Lopez, who was super, super dangerous, you know, but he is coming off that brain bleed from the Lopez fight.
Yes.
You know, he got back in the win column again. So he's back in the mix. Cause dude, when you're a former champion the way that he is, you're already in the room. But also, he was so dominant for so long. Like he made a lot of defenses of that title, which has been changing hands crazy, you know. And he was a guy who was pretty consistent, much more so than the other weight guys in the weight class. So, yeah, I think he gets right back into the mix.
Yeah, I don't know if he's still signed with Top Rank. I'm not privy to the contracts. So
yeah, well, they posted even Top Rank themselves posted a good luck because he was fighting.
It's nice.
I saw that on there. Yeah, Top Rank's cool, man. They're like a family.
They are. They know what they're doing. Not worried about them. Not worried about them looking for a TV deal. Not worried about them. But they have a very good stable. They have a lot of young fighters. Like Top Rank is gonna be fine. Rebessi Ramirez. What's up with him?
Oh,
you know, last time you saw him, he kind of quit. Punch in the eye.
So that actually makes more sense for a Shushu fight. You got a guy who's you know, was there and is definitely on the outs. You get the old lion and the new lion, you know, and you want the new lion to eat the old lion and move on.
That'd be a fight between two hungry guys. I'm assuming that Robesi still has that fire.
How hungry is Robesi?
I'm assuming that he still has that fire.
My guy quits a lot of times.
You're hitting the eye. Not everyone wants to break their eye like you. Not everyone's willing to break their eyeball.
Well, hungry guys are. Guys are. I was starving.
That's damn right. So that's 126. Hack Carrington did look pretty good. Brian Norman blitzes Derek Cuevas in 3 rounds. My parlay blew up because I had Norman 7 through 12. Did correctly predict Zepeda by decision. So if you bet just Zepeda plus 180, good job. But I don't care about that. You know that. I wanted to see Norman look good. And he did. He did what he was supposed to do. This was very much a showcase. Hadn't fought in 16 months, Norman. Is the youngest male champion in boxing. It was like a, hey, you remember me type of deal for Norman? Like, I have hands. The rest of my game is up for debate. Like, do you see that type of narrative around Norman? Like, strong puncher. Just don't really know the rest of his game too well. Like, I don't know how he stacks up against some of the other guys at 147.
He was a real anomaly for a while because he was a built up guy early on, and he's a young guy, so I'm not knocking him being built up at all.
24 years old,
super young guy, and he had a sterling record. And I watched him on a few top rank undercards, and not that he wasn't impressing, but he wasn't impressing in terms of what he was supposed to be doing with the guys that were in front of him. He had a war with the guy Boca Chica. You know, I think they dropped each other. There was a bad cut. It was an interesting firefight early on. And Boca Chica is a guy who's lost on Pro Box TV air. You know, not a world beater by any means. And then Santillan was, I mean, he was doing great work, had awesome momentum, was coming off a win after win after win, but just wasn't getting his shot. And he gets his shot. And it's those two young, hungry guys, undefeated, Brian Norman Jr. and Santillan. And most people were looking at that fight like Santillan is going to keep doing what he's doing. He's a lunch pail guy. He's going to come to work. He's going to beat you up. He's going to get the win. He's very solid. And Norman destroys him. And then, so then it's like, who is this guy? I'm like, if that guy shows up, he's a problem. And then I think he looked even better this fight against much lower competition, but he looked like a champ. They always say that a champion gets 30% better once they become a champion, or a fighter gets 30% better. He looked better. He looked calm. He looked cool. He was picking his shots. His power was there. But I still don't have a lot of answers yet because I have not seen him beat a world-class opponent yet. He's a world champion, but he has not beaten a world-class guy. And he's in a weight class where it's not a super deep division, but there's world-class guys there. So we got to see how he's going to match up with these other champs that are there, because there are some pocket studs at 47. Of course, you know, Ennis, you've got Mario Barrios, I think, is a little long in the tooth, but Stanionis is a monster. So it's an interesting place to be for Brian. Like,
I'll tell you this, like, finally, like, welterweight is like getting kind of interesting now.
Yeah, Norman, it's coming back alive.
Norman is a puncher, and he's 24, undefeated. Top rank behind him. Jaron Ennis, Stanionis. We're getting that April 12th, April 13th, whatever it is, in Atlantic City. Excited about that one. We'll have a unified welterweight champion one way or another. Barrios, as you mentioned, has the WBC belt, and that's big. But I can't get that last performance out of my mind with Abel Ramos and him, Barrios hitting the canvas. Great dude, but, you know, that belt, he's holding a hostage to that WBC belt. So, you know, under this
string.
Yes, he's holding on to it, though. Belts are currency. Belts are currency if you've watched boxing long enough. And this is certainly the case with Barrios. And we talked at the top of this episode about this PBC Top Rank working together. PBC is with Barrios. Top Rank has Norman. Could we see a Norman Barrios unification bout around, you know, pair that with the Ennis Stanionis unification? Suddenly, we have ourselves a tournament of the champions at welterweight, and we have some movement here, and we can see Norman emerge. Go ahead.
PBC has those guys too, right? Stanionis and Ennis. Oh no, Ennis is with Matchroom. Stanionis is with PBC, right?
Yes. He is with TGB, and he is with PBC's. Last I heard from our guy Tom Brown, who is an avid listener of the show.
Nice.
Hello, Tom. How are you? I'm talking directly to you. But I like this. Make that fight, Tom. If Stanionis wins, put him in there with Norman and some of the other champions. But long story short, is like
Stanionis wins that fight, and you got a unified champ, and then you we're looking at Undisputed very easily.
Ennis is the favorite. Like Ennis, Norman. Like here's the deal. Like we just talked about like the lottery cards and the finagling. Like Norman turned down the boots fight, and he got dragged, and he had a rough like time. The last 16 months for Brian Norman out of the ring, getting dragged for ducking boots. Boots might move up to 154. Norman, you know that there were some nights where Norman was like, man, what is this the right move? Like, should I have fought Ennis? Like, what happens if Ennis leaves this division? And, you know, and I don't, that payday's gone. There's a lot of movement now. If Ennis stays at 147, and, you know, he's said that he wants to, right? Ennis has said, I want to be undisputed before I go up to 154, where there are some massive fights waiting for him, Ennis. You know, a Norman Ennis fight. And that's fun. I mean, it's two punchers with that like to stay in the pocket, don't mind getting hit. Like obviously I'd favor Ennis, but man, that's really fun. Looking ahead a little bit.
Yeah, I mean I've always said this. When Ennis was flirting with moving up, I was like, man, I'd much rather him stay and unify 47. It's not an easy job because it's cool that he's fighting the toughest guy first, Stanionis. I think Stanionis is a real problem. But he gets by him. I don't see Mario Barrios giving him a lot of trouble. And even Brian Norman I know he's getting better and he's starting to improve. I still favor Ennis in that fight by a lot. So I would love to see all those fights happen. And looking like it'll be pretty easy to make all those fights.
Regardless,
we need an undisputed at 47. It's a marquee weight class. Even if the fighters aren't marquee.
Dude, you get an undisputed champion. Like say Boots emerges from this, the division like is finally back and he moves on to 154. It also comes down to him making the weight. Like I can't forget that interview after the second Karen fight where he's like, it was one of the strangest post fight interviews ever. He was just admitting like, I'm done at this weight, going 154. I don't know. Maybe some added intrigue gets a better nutritionist, gets his head back on.
Dude, it's hard to interview fighters immediately after fights, man. Yes. Some of the things that we say and some of the things that we're thinking, you can't hang your hat on what a fighter says after a fight. Like, for one, we just did the most difficult sporting event known to man. A 12-round championship level fight is the hardest.
And I'm sticking a mic in your face.
Yeah, and you're sticking a mic in
your
face.
You're sweating all over my suit.
But dude, I've also been punched in my head for 12 rounds, 36 minutes of action, and that was a tough fight. It was a tough fight. You know, guys, there are fights where we win that look easy where we get concussed. So, and now you're talking to us live on air in front of millions of people. It's a really difficult thing to do. And to hang on every word that a guy says, because everyone is, it's my least favorite part about the sport because, you know, guys say things. Teofimo Lopez is great for that. You know, saying,
do I still got it?
He says wild stuff anyway. But yeah, you get caught here on hot mics and saying things like that. And people like really, you know, judge you on what you say after those fights. And it's like,
yeah.
So I love doing those interviews. I don't want to knock. Yeah, of course.
There's so much fun.
And Ennis is he's a hard interview anyway. He's not a really comfortable in front of the mic. You know, he's not a big talker at all. You know, he goes out there and does it with his fists. So interviewing him right after a fight, especially a tough one, I wouldn't take really what he said with too much.
No. 154 is always there for him, and he might be re-energized. I would think he is, because this is what he said since day one once he got here at 147. Is I want to be unified. I want to be undisputed. So he could be re-energized. It could give him that extra motivation to make the 147 if he has a path now to become undisputed, and there is a path here. Like Norman should fight Barrios next, and then Ennis is fighting Stanionis next, and the winner should face off. Not that hard. Lastly, the main event on Saturday night was Michaela Mayer, and Sandy Ryan, which was another fun fight. Mayer wins. She was in control for the first 7-8 rounds. She threw more punches. She landed more punches. She got a nasty cut over her eye late that allowed Ryan to try to take advantage of it. So the last two rounds were crazier than the first 7 or 8, which were controlled by Meyer. So she wins. she could fight Lauren Price, who is that's an undisputed fight at 147, or there's a money fight hanging out there with Bumgarner too, which was signed to MVP. I just don't know which weight that fight would be at.
Yeah, I mean, Mayer is looking better at this higher weight. She's a problem. She's able to, she throws a lot of punches. She's got a good jab. She's even tall for this weight class, even though she's moved up three weight classes in the last 3 years. She's tall for the weight. She's big for the weight. I think she grew into the weight even better. Like in the first Sandy Ryan fight, it was a really close fight. She looked like there was a little bit of an issue with the strength. And even Sandy was saying that. She's like, you're not a real welterweight. Now she is. And I think you saw that. That was the difference in this fight. It's just Mayer being stronger this fight than she was last fight and was able to control Sandy, keep her on the outside. So good win. Bunch of good fights still on the table for Mayer. You mentioned the Price fight. I like that fight. I really like Price. I've been impressed with her recently. But I would like to see how she deals with someone of a body type like Mayer. Mayer in a 10-2 minute round situation, really, really hard to beat.
Yeah.
She throws a lot of punches. She controls distance well. Just stylistically and physicality, very, very hard to beat her in 10-2s. So I'm not going to say I favor her over all those girls, but I see her being able to beat pretty much anybody around.
Yeah, she fights Price next. That's become undisputed at 147, then revisit the Bumgarner rematch. The Bumgarner rematch is the money fight. But Bumgarner is not 147-pounder.
No, she's 130. Yeah.
So
talks about moving up a lot and going to different weight classes. And women generally can do that because size doesn't matter as much in terms of weight. The size matters more with height with women than it does with because they're not big punchers anyway, and you rarely get knockouts at the highest level. So weight doesn't matter as much. That's why you see women jumping all over the weight class. Amanda Serrano fought in how many weight classes? Six? You know, and she was going up and down and sideways, you know, throughout her whole career. You never
MMA.
See that. Men never go up and then go back down and then go back down again and then go up again. Like Amanda's
well, they been do. Able if to they do, that. They get in trouble.
Well, yeah, then they're obviously, you know, because they're still knocking people out. And then
I didn't mean like that. I meant like you're playing with fire. Like, I think of Roy Jones. Like you go up, you go down. You go up, you go down. Like you become vulnerable.
Guys generally lose. Then it takes a lot out of them. Women aren't the same. The weight class doesn't matter as much. That's why you see, like I said, these women jump all over.
So I'd like to see Mayer unify. Wouldn't mind seeing the Bumgarner fight. That's I don't think that's next, but I'm curious to see what Bumgarner does. I think she'll fight. Bumgarner will fight on that Netflix card on July 11th. I don't know that for sure. I'm just guessing, but and then we'll see there. Emiliano Vargas also fought this weekend and knocked the guy out. Nasty.
He was looking like his dad out there, man. That left hook was nasty.
Nasty. This dude has got the it factor. I understand everyone wants to see him fight better competition, but he's 20 years old. Top Rank knows what they're doing. He's building up his profile. I mean, he made a comment before the fight about Keyshawn. So him and Keyshawn Davis are having like a war of words. And Vargas is probably like, this is great. I have a world champion like looking at me. I'm 20 years old. I understand my name is probably why some of these fighters are looking at me. But he also said, like, Vargas said this, I make more endorsements than Keyshawn Davis made in his last fight. And like that kind of like rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. But it's just like what Vargas is. Like, he is a lineage. He is a good looking kid. He's marketable, but he is good as well. I just want to see. Is he as good as Abdullah Mason? Probably not, because no one is in terms of prospects. But Vargas is going to be around, man. This is Top Rank is going to have this kid and push him properly.
He's a Top Rank special. You mentioned the lineage. How about the heritage? He's Mexican. You know, so the Top Rank's always looking for the next Mexican star, even though he's a Mexican American. You know, but he's Fernando 2.0 because Fernando is always rough around the edges. Yeah, well, yeah, he is and he isn't. Fernando was always rough around the edges, though. He was rough. He was mean. He was brash. He would say things, curse. And this kid's like squeaky clean.
Yeah.
But he can fight. And he's looking more and more like that knockout the other day. That was a El Ferdo's knockout. Like, boom, that nasty left hook. He's coming along. He's coming together in that way. Is he as good as his dad? It's hard to be as good as Fernando. Fernando was an.
Well, he wants to. I know for a fact he wants to have a longer career than his dad. His dad was a shooting star.
Well,
like
Well, his dad was there for a good time, not a long time.
I'm talking about like he packed. Yeah, he packed a lot into those first 4 years. Like,
yeah,
senior. Yeah,
and, but he, I mean, but he, when was he retired? He was retired before 30, wasn't he? He was completely
right.
Gone. I was actually just talking about this. Yeah, just fought really, really tough guys. Was willing to get hit. You see with Emiliano, he's got a different style.
Yeah, he learned. His dad is. It's a lot of the Vargases. There's like five of them. Emiliano's the best.
Yeah.
And of the pack, no disrespect to the other brothers, but you can just see that.
I think Emiliano, they would agree as well, though. I don't think
yeah.
It's really a question.
You can see that Emiliano doesn't. He wants to obviously love. He wants to follow in his father's footsteps. Pretty clear. He's boxing. And he doesn't. He wants to learn from the mistakes. And, if you talk to Fernando Vargas these days, he's very open and he's very direct. He's very open with some of the things that are going on in his life right now in terms of his brain trauma that he suffered. He's very open about teaching his kids, like, I want your career to be different than how mine was. So, I mean, that's a great dad there. And that's a great person to look up to, the good and the bad.
And he's coaching them too, so he has he has direct access to the style that they're employing to make sure that they don't get hit as much as he did.
Yeah. So that was this past weekend. A lot of fights next weekend. Pro Box, you're heading out on the road. Where are you going this weekend? Philly.
We actually had a really solid card. Philly. Nice. We got a nice Philly card. I just posted the card on my story.
A little bit of easier travel. You're probably so excited not to go to California.
Dude, staying on this coast is awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. The cross country, man, those are rough.
Rough.
We got Mykon Williams fighting, though. Mykon Williams.
Love him.
He's been a shooting star lately. He's fighting Antonio Moran, which is a good fight.
I called his last fight.
Mykon? Yes. We called
the
same
time. We both called it.
Yes.
I don't know where my call lives. Apparently, it's going to be on like MSG, I think, or like SNY. Like, that was weird.
I think it was SNY, but whatever. And then this kid Jonathan Lopez, Gio Lopez.
No, you've told me about him though.
Oh, he's excellent. He's fighting Rene Alvarado, like big step up fight. Rene is a guy who's been around forever, super super durable. Nobody stops him. Again, he's a bit of an opponent at this point, but he's very high level. And Gio Lopez is solid, dude. So this is it's a good card, and that's not even the main event. But, the main event is Salas and Cruz, which is a nice little scrap with guys who have actually very, very good records.
That's Pro Box. Richard Torres, Guido Villanello, I messed that name up. Abdullah Mason, Tim Zhu, Joyce Hergovic. That's all this upcoming weekend. We'll have another episode later in the week previewing that and whatever news and notes to come our way. Hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. Hope everyone has a great week. I'm going to the gym to work out.
I'm going to Pro Box to work. And then I'm working out after that.
All right, everyone. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next time.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.